Welcome to the Leadership Mindset Podcast with me, Tony Brooks, where we look to revolutionize your leadership mindset by changing how you think and see your world, enabling you to do the right things and grow significantly as a leader. Welcome back to the Leadership Mindset Podcast series. And as we did a few weeks back, actually, when Helen Packham and I were talking about my journey to writing a book, I thought it would be really interesting to do a podcast session, this time with a bit different again, where Helen interviews me and talks to me about my journey doing the TEDx talks. I know a number of people have said to me that they're interested in possibly doing this in the future. So the intention of this is I'm hoping it's really useful for anybody who might be thinking about going on the path, the highs, lows, pros and cons or whatever, of doing a TEDx talk. And for those of you who don't know, Helen has been my coach for over a year now. And Helen used to be a TEDx curator down south and now does some wonderful work in leadership behavior and my fantastic coach as well. So thank you, Helen, for spending the time to interview me today.
It's an absolute pleasure, Tony. Real pleasure.
Good. Do you want to fire away with some questions then, and I'll see what I can do to answer them?
Of course. So I think a lot of people would be interested to know is what the driver of this was and what made you want to actually do a TEDx talk?
Yeah, and I think that's a really important part or important question anybody needs to ask themselves if they're going to do it, because that will, the purpose of it will drive you through all the things that you need to do, really. But for me, it was, I've become, as people listening to this will probably know, become really fascinated in survival thinking and how it can play out in a number of ways for people, for leaders. And so the idea of doing a book came up, which the book's coming out shortly. But I'm also keen to do more and more speaking work, in all honesty. And so I thought, what greater opportunity experience than doing a TEDx talk, where you've got the discipline of creating something that's around about 15 minutes without script, without slides in the end. We'll come to that in a bit. So a brilliant discipline, but then also something that I've always got as a video to share with people if they want to see my work, an example of my work, and a really good quality example of my work. So that was a big part of it. And also, it's been really heartwarming, actually, to hear how many people found the talk useful, both when they came along on the day and who started to watch the video. So I feel I've got a message that's going to be helpful for people as well, which I wanted to spread as far and wide as I could. And again, going into the TED arena seemed like a really good way of doing that.
I totally agree with all those things. You know, it's a legacy. It's something that can help others, and also TEDx does provide the platform to provide that reach because of the sheer amount of YouTube subscribers on the channel. So I think those are all really good reasons for wanting to do a TEDx talk. But how did you find the process? How did you find the application process itself?
Yeah, no, I'll go into that, but obviously it's important to mention as well, I forgot this in my intro, that Helen has done a TEDx talk herself. 2016, was it, Helen?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes.
So, just to say that Helen has obviously been down that path, not just as an organiser, but did a talk as well. Having you alongside me helped the whole process enormously, in all honesty. So I actually, it was funny because I found out about, for people who don't know, TEDx events are basically a franchise run across the world. So people have the franchise in different locations across the world and typically run one event a year. So I was trying to find out where the Nottingham one was, because that's where I'm based. And I was looking around in February and found out that it had happened in January. So I thought, that's a shame I missed that boat. But obviously there was going to be another one following January. So I literally found out who was the curator of the event, Mitzi Williams, wonderful Mitzi, and connected with Mitzi. And she said, I'll let you know once the event application sort of becomes live. And so, which she did, and then there was an application form or an application process to go through, which again you helped me with, Helen, which was really identifying what my talk was going to be about, why I felt it was an idea worth spreading. And also, you have to fit in with the theme of the event as well. So each TEDx event will have a theme, and this one was creativity through adversity. So you and I looked at how to adapt what I talk about to fit in with the theme of the event. So I eventually applied in March, and then heard in April that I'd been selected to be one of the speakers. So that was great, to be honest. It was I think actually picking a location near myself, making sure I could fit with the theme, all of those sort of things helped me get selected to be one of the speakers. So yeah.
It definitely did, and obviously I've helped quite a few people to go through this process, and I think you mentioning that is a really important one in terms of decision making in TEDx, because picking somewhere that's got a connection to you already puts you in an advantageous position because of your connection, but also how you actually made your idea and your expertise fit perfectly with that theme and that angle of the talk. So it's not maybe a talk that you've ever given before,
No.
and actually it's important that it isn't. And how you actually made that fit the theme. And I really enjoyed that process of working on that with you. And it paid off because you stood out, and it's actually quite a short period of time before that decision was made, which was really, really great. It just goes again to show how much your idea and your expertise were aligned with the theme of the event.
Yeah,
But
it's important to respect that, isn't it, Helen? I think
it really
everyone
is.
makes sure that you do that.
Of course, there's lots of sort of decision points along the way when preparing for something like this. And the first thing is to make sure it is aligned with the theme and all of that sort of stuff. But once you got accepted, what decisions did you make in actually building the talk and the content? Because there's obviously like lots of ways you can skin a cat with this.
Yeah, it was a really interesting journey in that I read three or four books around TED talks. One was called Talk Like TED, I think, and then there was one from the owner of TED. And one of the things that came out to me, and I think it's important for anyone considering it, in my opinion, is we can all, and I can certainly be guilty of overcomplicating things at times and trying to put too much into things. So the one thing I really wanted to do is have a fairly consistent theme that went through the talk and then hang things off it. I've got a story, whatever. But obviously the main thrust of my talk is that survival thinking can exaggerate, distort, and imagine problems, and that you need to be able to get a grip on that and understand it to be able to be creative and find your way through things. And that was the in short, that was the core theme through that. So that was a big decision, I think, making sure I was clear on what was going to be the theme of the talk and not over cluttering that. And then there were some interesting, and what happens again for people not familiar with the process, there were eight speakers at our event, and we obviously formed a group, and we had, couple of online rehearsals and a physical one. And it was interesting to test it out because I started off by having a few slides. Not a lot, but I had a few slides. And the feedback from the group when we were rehearsing was they felt it would be better without. And I resisted that a little bit at first and sort of took some slides out, but eventually ended up with no slides, as a lot of TED talk are really. And that made it more challenging because it was harder to memorize 15 minute talk. But actually, in the end, I'm really pleased I did that because it made me use my body language more. So rather than have screen images, I played around with some things with body language to do that, which I thought worked really well. And it also keeps the focus on you completely rather than visual images. So that was a key decision point to take ripping the slides out. And I do think in the end, I'm glad I did that. I think it worked well.
It was a really good decision. I know that this talk is a really good example of where you strip it back. And I think with TED, with any type of communication, presentation, talk, whatever it is, less is always more. And the decision to take those slides out, I think, was a fantastic one because it really did put the focus on you, what you were saying, and your body language. So you, the red dot, and your ideas. And that really shone through when I saw it back. And so, yeah, I think that was a brilliant decision that
Yeah,
you
no,
made there.
thank you. And I think the other one was about using my own personal story, but not going in too heavy with that. So I
Yes.
find sometimes people just becomes too much about their personal story and not enough about what people take away from it.
That's
But I did
it.
a linked story where I talk about losing a tooth at the beginning and then come back to it at the end. And I thought that was a good decision that, to use that. That felt like that worked really well in the end. So yeah.
Did. And I think in the context of the idea, it worked really well because it was a story that people could relate to, that they could then connect with the message that you were delivering. So they could like swap out your story about losing a tooth to anything that they could. And that's what makes that talk really relatable.
That's true. Yeah, it's and it and I sort of illustrated that in the TEDx talk as well, that although it might be not a losing a tooth, you're being in situations where your survival thinking gets things completely out of kilter and out of perspective. So yeah, it wasn't a, it is a lot of work. I mean, we'll come to that in a bit. It's a lot of work because you do keep reworking and changing and fine-tuning. It's important to do that. And
Yes, it
then
is.
there's the whole rehearsal of it and whatever else.
Well,
But there is
let's
a
talk
lot.
about that. Let's talk about
Yeah,
that
yeah.
because with the fact that you had no slides,
Yeah.
so you didn't have any kind of visual crutch to keep you anchored in, which is what a lot of people use slides for, wrongly or rightly. You didn't have that. You didn't have any notes. You didn't have any prompts. How did you rehearse so that when you actually delivered it, you absolutely delivered it impeccably,
Oh, thank you.
completely in flow. How did you rehearse to then be able to do that?
You know, it's just come to me, and I honestly genuinely hadn't thought about this before, but it might actually be pertinent. I think having the slides initially might have helped me block it more, and then
Right.
taking them out still. Actually, I've never thought about that before, Helen.
Yeah.
But I
So
think
like a
actually,
visual memory.
I think that may have helped actually. But anyway, in the end, it was more about being blocked to the talk and knowing particular blocks I was going to, and then having links between the blocks so that I knew when I said something, it was linking to the next block. And then obviously, it's about the hard work of memorizing as much as you can what you're going to say. And again, I think another important thing for me, and I know you feel the same, Helen, is I didn't 100% deliver that word for word as I did it in rehearsal. And I think don't put your pressure on, you know, if you're 90, 95% there. So I knew the blocks, had a good idea what I was going to say, and I'd rehearsed it well. But I was also gave myself license to relax and think, you know, the talk and just talk through it and don't worry if it's not 100% accurate. In fact, I ad-libbed a couple of things on the day, probably a couple of the humorous, slightly humorous bits just sort of came through as I went through the talk. So I think knowing you're talking in terms of chunks, and for me, rather than the slides in the end, the visual body language that I was doing was something that helped me remember a part of the talk that I was coming to, and knowing the sequence of it. And also, so then in terms of rehearsing in a broader sense, rehearsed it quite a lot on my own, first of all, and then with my wife and dog Archie, he saw it a lot. So do, but I think it's important to keep standing up and delivering it. I guess there's mixed views on whether you want to do that. And actually, it's a bit, you have to be careful because, as you said, the talk needs to be unique. So you can't go out testing it with audiences because people will have seen it then. So Ted would not be happy with that. Or whether you want to share it with friends confidentially and get them to look at it and all that. A couple of friends made some really good points actually. I'm going to do a quick shout out to Ian Walker and Colin Moby, in particular actually, who gave me some really good ideas. There were other people, but sorry and apologies. Those two leaped to mind. But yeah, and then also I recorded the audio of it and used to listen to it in the car. So it was just settling more and more into my mind about what I was talking about. But I think blocking the talk, knowing the different parts to it and having the links, it is really helpful.
It really is, and as a method of sort of memory retention, and also then relaying that information, it uses a different part of the brain. So if we memorize a script, it actually means that we're more prone to forgetting what we're going to say, and it also gets delivered in a more robotic way. Whereas if you learn it in chunks, which you did, anchoring it with visuals, which you did, and then removing those visuals, you were able to remember the structure of the talk rather than word for word, and it came across really naturally. So a really good technique, and all the practice you did as well, recording it, listening it back in the car, with friends and family, those are all fantastic ways of rehearsing, and that was your personal experience of rehearsing. What about the formal rehearsals? What were the formal rehearsals like?
So we had two online sessions. So everybody delivered their talk and got feedback with Mitzi sitting in on the session. So we did a couple of online ones. Then we met physically at a location in Nottingham and everybody, pretty much everybody anyway, rehearsed in person and got feedback. I think for me personally, there was only a couple of us who attempted to rehearse in that physical rehearsal without notes. And you've got to decide what's best for you. Other people rehearse with notes, but I think it's good to push yourself out of your comfort zone and get. I mean, to be honest, mine fell apart in a couple of areas without having any notes. But it was good though because it at least made me do it without notes and start to get used to doing that. I never have notes typically when I do keynote talks. I'll have slides and I have occasionally done talks without anything at all. But I think it was good to start releasing that crutch of having the notes and fall flat on your side a bit, on occasions as well with it, both at home and when we actually did that formal re final rehearsal in person. But yeah, I thought they were really useful because there was some insightful comments made by the other speakers, and we all did that for each other. And I think that had a big impact on a lot of our talk, my talk, but other people's talks, I think, in terms of reshaping them. So, and obviously Mitzi's feedback through the process as well. And for your sins, you had to look at the video a few times over the months, Helen, and give me your feedback. So, yeah, no, it's good, good, and but I think getting into that situation where you're standing up, delivering it without notes, even if it's just your friends or your partner at home, is a good one to start repeating really and get into that groove.
And the thing, the takeaway there is the power of collective feedback, really, that don't do it in an echo chamber. Don't just practice by yourself. Getting other people's opinions and viewpoints is really important. However, I guess there comes a point where you need to batten down the hatches and get in your lane with it. So
I remember that phrase, stay in your lane.
with that in mind, how did you prepare in the last 24 hours before your talk?
I did do a fair bit of rehearsing the morning of the day before, but then I broke away from that. And what for me, I mean, I'm a leadership psychologist and talk a lot about mindset anyway, but so I should really focus on this. But what was important for me was getting my head in the right space. And one thing that I've looked at in the past, which I thought would be interesting to do again, was a bit of self-hypnosis. So I had an audio from somebody I knew from before, And I went on a session with another person who did some self-hypnosis, and I got the audio for that. And I went through those a couple of times. And it was good actually just to stop to, and obviously the idea of hypnosis is really to feed into your unconscious. And I think it helped create a sense of calm and confidence around things. And then I had a number, I created an audio of about 4 or 5 minutes talking to myself, which was a lot about go and enjoy it, have a great time with this, you've got it, just generally positive comments to myself, really, about, and it was enjoyable just to listen to me talking to myself, because we all talk to ourselves all the time, but this was just much more positive and constructive than the normal kind of approach, really. And then interestingly, when it got to the day, and you and I talked about this, Helen, as well, before the event, you jumped on a call with me, I think it was a couple of days before, to help me prepare myself psychologically. But on the morning, the big thing for me, when I drove into Nottingham for it, I had kind of music that is quite positive for me, and whatever floats your boat. But for me, a good bit of positive rock music and some other stuff as well was good. And I really wanted to enjoy it. And I think the danger is that in our WhatsApp group for all the other TEDx speakers, everyone's saying, "Big day, the big day's here, the big day." And what you're doing, ironically, because I was talking about how your survival instinct can get things out of kilter, I think it was magnifying the importance of it too much. And I think it created nerves, particularly in some people that hindered their performance. So I very much thought, enjoy it. Don't get too hung up on this. And this, may sound a little bizarre, but when I got to the location, the way I was talking to myself was, enjoy this. And hey, it's not Freddie Mercury at Live Aid. It's not Bruce Springsteen in front of a massive audience. It's 100 people at a TEDx talk. Don't get it out of. So I was really, although it was important for me to do a good job, the way I talked to myself was downplaying it. Enjoy it. It's only 100 people. And okay, what if it goes wrong? It's not exactly going to damage your career or whatever. So it was almost that sort of strange downplaying the importance to be able to go on and then just enjoy it. And that was the thing that I was very conscious about, because if you enjoy a talk, that will come across better for other people as well. And I think people genuinely see I enjoy being up there. And I did.
Oh,
I
yeah.
might not. I'm not saying, and again, you've got to be careful because like the adrenaline goes a bit. And another thing I picked up from Bruce Springsteen years ago is when his adrenaline goes, he doesn't tell himself he's nervous. He tells himself he's excited. So I never, people were coming up to me going, "Oh, are you nervous?" And I went, "No, I'm excited." And that was a conversation with myself as well. Because say if you cook it, overcook it, and you start telling yourself, "Oh God, I'm feeling nervous," whatever, that's gonna, for me, I think that can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So it was really
Massively. The power of positive self-talk, and I think you made a really good point there in grounding. Grounding, not just, physically, but mentally, in terms of, as you say, downplaying it and making it more logical rather than allowing the survival thinking to overtake and catastrophize and, allow the imposter to come in. All of the things that you talk about in your talk is true. And so that there's so much power. And, I had a very different experience in the preparation for mine, but essentially when it came down to the last few moments before I gave mine, I was doing similar but different things in order to get myself grounded. So it's really good advice that you're giving there for other people who are delivering any type of talk or presentation.
Totally, totally. It's a big thing for me when I do keynotes. I have a few things I say to myself before, but one of them is enjoy it. If you've done as much as you can in terms of preparing, get on with it and enjoy it, and that's really important. And I think your experience of doing a TEDx, Helen, was you only found about it days before, didn't you? Or
24
was it
hours.
24? God, yeah, it's 24 hours. So Helen's experience was not like mine, knowing 11 months in advance. You got 24 hours notice. So incredible, really, that you put, I can't imagine being put in that position, but hey, I guess you
Pros and
just thought,
cons to both, I think.
but I guess you respond how you respond, really, don't you? But and as you said, I think then a lot of, for both of us in very different situations, it's still, when it comes down to it, get yourself in the right headspace as you go out there, because that is really critical.
Yeah.
I think it's
And you did
important.
it, and it was amazing, and you enjoyed it, and it was such a moment. How did that feel?
It felt excellent, actually. There were a few people there that I know. Rebecca is there, my wife, and some good friends, and a couple of clients. And then there was the group. I'm in the Professional Speakers Association in the East Midlands, so there was quite a big group of them. So that was, I thought that might be daunting, but it was actually quite nice having all those different kind of people there. And I got a really good response when I finished, straight away when I finished the talk. But I think I knew I'd done a good job as well. So I just felt really pleased, actually, that I had done a job that I couldn't have done it. Hey, I mean, I'm not saying it was 100% perfect, but I couldn't have done it much better, really. I couldn't have been much happier with it. So that felt brilliant. And I was on a bit of a TEDx high, I think, as you know, Helen, for a couple of weeks after, I think, sort of floating around a little bit with it all.
Poof, that dopamine.
Yeah, but then you've got to get into the actually talking about it and promoting it, because this is the thing as well. I've heard a few people who've done TEDx talks say, oh, it didn't really do much for me. But I think you've got to be prepared to do some work to
Yes.
promote it, talk about it, use it. So I work with speaker bureaus, and I was quickly getting them to put the video on my page on their website. And those kind of things really are important for, to make the best use of it. I mean, it's a great thing. You and I have chatted about it, Helen. I think the great thing about doing a TEDx talk is it's always there. It's a legacy piece. And if you do a good job, whenever anybody's interested in what you do as a speaker, here's my TEDx talk. For me, it's better than a showreel, because it's a real life example of how you talk in 15 minutes. But you do need to be ready then to do, which I still continue to do. I think the video went live last week. We're just in the beginning of March now. So the video went live at the end of February, which was around about 5 or 6 weeks after the talk itself. So it was starting to get ready. So when the video went live, starting to talk about that and promote it on social media and make best use of it. So I think it's a really important point. If you're going to go into do a TEDx talk, be prepared to put the work in to promote it, to get people
It's
to come
true.
watch you, to get people to talk about it, to
It's
promote it
true.
yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I think an initial push after the event to get people hearing about it, get it out there. And then you can change your strategies as time goes on. It's interesting now, however many years on. Of course, the work that I do is in alignment with that. What I find now is that people that I talk to, or conversations I have, I get them saying, "Oh, I went and watched your TEDx talk." So, that it's something of interest if someone wants to look up more about you, if they want to find out more about you, watching your TEDx talk is a really great way of doing that. And the amount of ways that people are coming in and watching that talk could be for so many different reasons. And you'll find that that people will get in touch. They'll, on LinkedIn or wherever it is, as time goes on, and they'll be giving you feedback or telling you why they were inspired about it. And gosh, that's the best feeling. But you are right. Toby Moore, who's the curator of TEDx Brighton, recently was on a radio show with him. TEDx Brighton is a big TEDx event, and he's been the curator for a number of years. He said, "Be willing to make it sweat."
Yeah, that's a good expression, I think, isn't it? And make yourself sweat doing it, I think.
Because otherwise it will just sit there. Of course it's going to garner interest because there are that many subscribers. Of course it's going to naturally attract views, but telling people about it and working on that and getting it out there is also really important.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think that goes on. I think that journey, don't ever forget you've got that TEDx talk, because it might be relevant in certain scenarios. I mean, I've been talking to potential one-to-one client this week, and before that, I said, "Oh, here's an example of my work. You can use it not just in speaking work, but people getting to know you in a number of senses, really." So don't ever let it become something that you stop talking about. It's got to be something you talk about all the time. And I think then there are decisions to be made, which you've helped me with as well. You may well get approached by organizations who can bolster your views using software and that kind of thing. And that was another decision point, which I decided not to go down that path because I wanted to just keep working on it organically. But you may well get that kind of thing as well. So you've got to be ready to make decisions about how you want to promote and build your views, really, whether you want to do it organically or use some of these services that do it more artificially as well. And you helped me decide that that wasn't the path I wanted to go down. So there are lots of decision points as well in terms of what you do after it. And it's thinking about, hey, I need to update my LinkedIn profile, I need to go on my websites, it needs
Yes.
to be used on my social media, whatever. My LinkedIn profile has now got a picture of me doing the TEDx talk on the banner at the top, and all of that kind of thing. You've just got, as you said, you've got to sweat it. And that means thinking about every touch point that people might experience you. How can you put it out there? And I've not finished that yet. I've got work to do still to make sure that that is out there. And of course, thinking about, I've got a book coming out in 5 weeks. I've got to talk about both of them. So plenty to talk about.
Yeah. So as a result of this experience, Tony, what would you say your final thoughts are regarding this, and would you recommend it to others?
Final thoughts are, it was a really great experience. I'm not just fluffing your feathers, Helen. Well, I am fluffing your feathers, but it was brilliant having you along alongside me on the journey. And I think that is invaluable. I think if somebody's going to do this, it's worthwhile considering working with somebody like you, actually you specifically, I would say, to help on that journey, because there's lots of things that you might want somebody who's got more expertise to help you, and that was really important for me. I think it is, don't go into this with your eyes shut. It is hard work to get that talk nailed, sorted, rehearsed. I dread to think how many hours I spent doing it. I would still do it again because it's something I really wanted to do and I really enjoyed. And similarly with my book, when I wrote a first book, I said I'd never write a second, and I've written a second. So I'm glad I've done both. And I think it's also, be if you feel really passionate about your subject and the message that you want to get out there, and you feel you've got an idea worth spreading in, TED terminology, that will keep you moving through it as well. And that definitely kept me moving through that. I thought I've got something I think is useful to share with people. And yeah, so I think, but I think, don't go in, for anybody listening, don't go in with your eyes shut. Get some support and be ready to do the work, both for the talk and promoting the talk after. And but it's going to be there forever, isn't it? For as long as I'm around and beyond. And the TED talk will always be up on YouTube, and I think it is a really great legacy piece, as is writing a book. I think it's just something that, if you do a great job of, it's a really great asset to have.
Hugely,
Yeah.
massively.
And those are my final thoughts, really.
Well, thank you for sharing those, Tony. I think, some really good advice and wisdom and learnings and realness there in terms of your TEDx journey, and I'm sure many people will be inspired and motivated to go and seek that out for themselves.
Yeah, and I would say, to a final thing I'd say to anybody listening to it, A, first of all, it'd be great if you could give it a view and a comment on YouTube. So it's called Unleashing Your Creativity by Escaping Your Survival Thinking, fitting in the theme of the event. And also, if you are a couple of people I'm having chats with already, if you wanted a bit of advice and you're thinking of doing this, then please feel free to drop me a line, and I mean, obviously, I've only been through, some people have done the experience more than once, haven't they? But I've been through the experience once, and I'll share anything on top of what I've already shared today. But yeah, more than happy to do that if you want to connect with me and ask for a bit of initial advice.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Tony.
And thank you, Helen, for spending some time to put me under the spotlight and interview me again, which I
Pleasure.
appreciated.
If you want to explore your leadership mindset in more detail, why not complete our free leadership diagnostic at thetonybrooks.com and subscribe to this podcast to join us for future podcasts.